Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, in our continuing series of interviews with the Laureate for Irish Fiction, an initiative of the Arts Council, I'm delighted to say that Colm Tobin is back in Ireland from his other home in LA, and he's here in the studio, and it's lovely to have you here in person.
Good to be here.
Thank you very much for being here. You're adopted home in the headlines this morning with this dreadful news of the shooting in Texas, and we've been hearing the stories of the parents outside the community centre handing in their DNA samples to see if their child is one of those killed. When you sit here with the distance, what do you make of people, 18-year-olds, going in to buy assault rifles?
Yeah, well, obviously there's a whole way of getting fired up on the internet over a period of time if someone is lonely, if someone is isolated, if someone is particularly paranoid. It's all there to feed you at night on the internet. But the thing is, of course, the reason why it doesn't happen in other countries is that I wouldn't have a clue, and I don't think you would, as to what to buy or where to buy it if you wanted to do that in Ireland. There would be so many laws to stop us, so many ways of preventing us from acting on that. And in the United States, they don't have this because they believe that the right to bear arms is fundamental. But of course, the phrase the right to bear arms really can be taken asunder. It doesn't mean an automatic weapon because they didn't have automatic weapons when the American Constitution was being written. But try and tell anybody that now, because this is such a division in America over people who believe fundamentally that they have a right not just only to hunt with guns, but to protect their houses with guns, to keep guns. And so that the reason why the Senate isn't voting against this is because there is such a huge lobby, and it's not only vocal, but it's rich. And it could bring someone down. I mean, in other words, in various states in the United States, if you decided to move even slightly against the gun lobby, you would be removed. I mean, that would be the end of you.
Would you say it's even more powerful since Donald Trump?
Oh, absolutely. I think that moving out of that Trump consensus is now so dangerous for any politician, as we can see, in that they will be deselected. And so, it's much more polarised than it was. You think that these images would make people, would soften people.
Doesn't work.
But they don't do that. I mean, I saw Ted Cruz saying, well, yeah, in that case, let's arm teachers.
I know.
You know, so it's more guns rather than less guns.
Yeah. It just doesn't have the effect that you would expect it to have. And I was reading this morning that in Walmart they're selling bulletproof backpacks for children to take to school. I mean, it's just unfathomable sitting here in Ireland to hear that, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the idea of dropping a kid off at a school and like the words you would use, see you later or be safe or all the words you could use. Oh, maybe some other word, some other phrase we could use that might mean more because it's now that I might see, you know, at the end of the day, you know, like this is shooting schools is obviously one of the things, but obviously in Buffalo, just deciding to make a racist case of it and go and find a supermarket where black people are and shoot them. But the main thing is the availability of guns, that you can go and buy a gun on a whim. And that makes no sense to anyone.
Yes, yes. Anyway, let's come back to the reason why you're here. And you've published this collection of poetry recently called Vinegar Hill. Now, how different is that process for you, or is it, compared to what you normally write?
It's completely different. It's like writing a song. You know, in other words, I did write poetry when I was a teenager and then I stopped. I have to say there was no great mourning in the country when I stopped. In other words, it wasn't as though there was anyone saying that the next Seamus Heaney has just left us. You know, in other words, I wasn't any good. I couldn't find a way of doing it. And so there's 30 years where I didn't write any poetry. And then I started again, just, you know, the odd time, one or two a year. And then during the pandemic, I did much more. I had long days to myself. And in that time, any memory I had or any thought or any idea or anything at all, I would write down and follow it and just see what the next line might be. And suddenly these poems started. Mm-hmm. I would work on them every day. And it was a bit of a miracle. And I was
But did you
surprised.
Stop all those years ago because you felt I'm not very good at this? And then what's it like to resume?
It didn't come. It just wasn't. It isn't this process of where you're walking along the street and a line comes to you. And then a second line, you could go home and get a third. It just stopped. It just simply wasn't there. And I think anyone who writes poetry knows this, that you could get a year mm-hmm. when there's no poem for a year, and then it will come strangely. It really is about inspiration. It is a sort of miraculous thing.
You mentioned COVID and the pandemic, and you found some inspiration. I was reading September, which I love. I love. Could you recite it for us?
It's a sonnet, and it's true. And it was a Sunday morning, and I spent out on the street, and this episode occurred. The problem is you have to get home quickly enough where the first line comes and you start working to see if you could get it down into a sonnet, what has just happened on the street. So it's one of those poems that was written on the same day as the experience occurred. So the poem is called September. The first September of the pandemic, the skies are watercolour, white and grey, and Pembroke Street is empty and so is Leeson Street. This is the time after time, what the world will look like when the world is over, when people have been ushered into seats reserved for them in the luminous heavens. Moving towards the corner of Upper Pembroke Street and Leeson Street, an elderly man wears a mask. His walk is sprightly, his movements brisk. I catch his watery eye for a watery moment. Without stopping, all matter of fact, he says, "Someone told me you were dead."
I just love it. Are you somebody? That's what it brings. That's what it brings to mind.
Someone told me you were dead.
It's like remembering a dream, is
yes,
it?
Yeah.
You've got
yes.
to do it quickly.
Yes, yes. It's also that pandemic, that streets that were would have people in them and cars. You got on a Sunday morning, there was no one at all on the mm-hmm. street. And the sky, Dublin sky can have that thing sometimes. Just a lot of cloud, but it's luminous cloud. It's all light. Mm-hmm. And this fellow walking along, just passing. And he didn't even stop.
You love
I don't know
it,
who
though.
He was.
You love it. It's so Dublin. Yeah. But see, he was nearly right because you had a bad health incident. You were nearly dead.
That I had cancer and that I was dead. Yeah.
And you say that cancer, the experience of it, didn't change you, or you didn't come out of that experience saying, "Oh, I've found a new appreciation of life." And I love your explanation for that, because you say if you didn't appreciate life before something awful happens to you, well, you've got questions to answer, right?
Yeah, my feeling, I suppose, was that if you need chemo to really remind you of how great life is, then there's something wrong with you before. I mean, I found it really tedious, boring, painful, and I wanted it to be over. And, you know, I started dreaming about things. I mean, when I was awake dreaming, things like marinating a steak. I've never marinated. I wouldn't even know. Honestly, I would know toilet duck better than I'd know a marinade. Do you know what I mean? And
what was
so,
that about?
Why was I? Because you can't taste. Then anything to do with taste really begins to preoccupy you. And what happens then is, you know, my eyebrow, I mean, I was going to say I went bald, but I was bald anyway. But things grow back. I mean, your eyebrows grow back and stuff, and your taste comes back. It all is so gradual. And then you're back in business. But it isn't as though I haven't had a drink since. And I haven't had a drink because chemotherapy itself is a form of, it's liquid and it changes your mood and gives you a sort of hangover. And when it's over, you think, I don't want any more of that. Mm-hmm. The idea of taking in red wine that would go through your veins in the same way as chemo does.
Really?
And that would weaken you.
And that's
the idea of it would really sicken me. So I haven't been near drinks for all that time.
Yeah, I can understand that being the case soon afterwards and maybe for a period of 6 months. But it's like childbirth, like you forget.
Yeah, except you don't forget, Claire, because you see other people drinking and you think, why would I want to be like that?
So the red wine is gone.
Red wine is gone.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. no new appreciation for the birds and the flowers and the grass and the walking.
Except everyone in Dublin really has a problem with seagulls. I mean, you know, and because it was the summer when I was lying on the sofa and it was, you know, I got a sense of just how enormous the noise they make, the shrieking, the babies, the amount of, you know, they come just before the dawn. And the dawn can be early. So at 4:15 in the morning, they start squawking over your house. And then they spend the day making even more noise. And I have a big appreciation for the nuisance caused by seagulls.
Yeah, and they're huge. They are like dogs. I was looking at one only very recently, marvelling at the size of it. It was like a lamb. Yeah. You've written an opera too?
Yes, in Wexford, I did an adaptation of my novel, The Master, the novel about Henry James, and I did a libretto for an Italian composer called Alberto Caruso.
And we worked very hard on it. It's gone on, work's gone on for a long time. And finally, in end of October in Wexford, it's going to be performed. So it's going to be great to see
it. Another completely new experience for you.
Yeah, it's something I've always wanted to do because I love opera and I love classical music. And I love all forms of music, but writing your own songs and getting someone to compose them and hearing it for the first time. And there's a lullaby, you know, I've just written a lullaby. What are you doing today? I'm writing a lullaby for an opera, you know.
Wonderful. And in your role as Laureate, the last time you were on, you were talking to us about the book club. And Claire Keegan was the first author that you were looking at. How's that been going?
How has it worked? It's been going great. We had Colin Barrett's book, which I think is just coming up now. We did George Moore's novel, Esther Waters, which is not as well known as it should be. And we're going on to do Mary Lavin's book in the library in Dunleary on the day after tomorrow. So in the middle of the field. So we're sort of moving from a book that's just out, a contemporary book, to an older, you know, to books that people might have read years ago. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's going great.
And this is the bit where you tell us that we are much better readers than the Americans. We appreciate literature so much more than the Americans.
I think there's a way here that a new book here can really matter. And I think, and the way a new writer can emerge and people pay so much attention to that, I think that's happened here. It's happened here over the last few years, particularly with writers like Sally Rooney, Colin Barrett, Nisha Dolan, Belinda McKeown, those sort of writers. People are really, really paying attention to them, and they seem to spread over generations. It isn't just young people are reading them; even older people are reading them. And yeah, there's an absolute response to new fiction here.
I'd love to hear more from Vinegar Hill. Is there something in particular you'd like to read? I did think about November in America, but if there's something that you'd like to pick from it.
There's a poem at the end called Because the Night. And, there's a short poem. I've just opened it and I've just seen it, called Pangor.
Oh, yes.
And you know about Pangor.
Yes.
And every Irish poet has written a version of Pangor. And Pangor was it's an old Gaelic poem where the monk is copying a manuscript and he's hunting for words and the cat is beside him hunting for mice. And the monk writes a poem about the cat called Pangor. I hunt for words, Pangor hunts for mice. And everyone, you know, Seamus Heaney has written a version, Paul Muldoon, Ivan Boland. So anyway, this is my version of Pangor. Pangor. Pangor, a neighbour's cat, comes to my flat for peace and quiet. He likes to lick my bare toes while I type, but he cannot keep himself in check, and soon he starts to bite. Pangor, I bark, if you don't stop, I will put you back in the poem written by that monk.
I love it. It's great. It's great. Would you mind doing November in America for us as well?
Okay, sure, yeah. This is a true story where on the night that Trump was first elected, in other words, the counting hadn't started, but the voting had been done, there is a big event in New York. And it's so big that Jesse Norman is being brought on. There's a great American soprano, and she's going to sing You'll Never Walk Alone. And she's going to sing with, you know, really as though it's the most beautiful song, like operatic. But I'm with an English friend who's a writer, and we know it as a Liverpool fan song. So it's a big difference between us and them. The Americans are taking this very seriously, and I cannot stop laughing. November in America. It is the night of the election, and even the Republicans in the room do not believe Trump can beat Hillary. A Republican woman tells me about Obama. You see, he killed a man. Later, I wondered if there were signs then of the catastrophe to come. And yes, at the opening of the event, Jessie Norman, from her wheelchair, sang You'll Never Walk Alone, her tone grave, stately, like she was singing High Mass, crossed with one of the sad Schubert songs. The piano accompaniment was even more weighty than the voice. When you walk, sounded as though we were entering the dark underworld rather than the raucous opening of an away match. The Liverpool fans belting the song straight into the goal. I had to warn my English colleague that we had somehow to get through this evening. She was shaking with laughter. I will pinch you if you don't stop. Through a storm. The New Yorkers were all silent, like God had been invoked or the nation or the founding fathers themselves had descended and were holding their heads on high. They were not afraid of the dark. I thought of all the sad stories I had ever heard to stop myself laughing out loud as the voice soared to further pitches of pure meaningfulness. How moving, how true,
Yes, go on. At the end of the storm, there's a golden sky. Soon the Republican woman will confide in me that Mitt Romney knew for a fact that Obama had killed a man. If he, honourable leader that he is, had not decided to conceal the knowledge for the sake of the nation, he could have won in 2012, she says. Halfway through the song, there is a crisis. People have noticed us, the Irish one, the Brit. Maybe they think we are crying at the sadness of it all, and soon we will be uplifted by the sweet silver song of a lark. But one or two have spotted that we are actually laughing. As Jessie wrings her hands and allows a quaver to carousel unbelievably into her voice, walk on through the wind. How could that be funny? It is a story of a struggle against adversity, becoming great again. Despite it all, later I will find out that my friend the Republican woman is married to one of the richest guys in New York and that Steve Munchen is at the table. But just now, as the singer walks on through the rain, there is not a dry eye among the Americans. Though their dreams be tossed and blown, I am sore with laughter, and the Brit is as sick as a parrot, as they say. That night, there is hope in their Yankee hearts as the ballots are being guarded against the truth. Soon, Twitter, fake news and rage itself will be all the rage, and children will be held in cages, and dreams will be tossed and blown. But that night, we see them in all their innocence, loving the song and comforted by the singer. Walk on, walk on. Outside, it was November in America. We went to a bar. There was hope, some hope in the hearts of those poised for power. It is sobering to remember we were not laughing anymore.
Colm Tobin, Laureate for Irish Fiction, thank you so much. What a pleasure to have you here. And you're going to be this evening appearing at the Beauthna Festival in Merrion Square in Dublin as part of the International Literature Festival Dublin. And if you want to book tickets, I assume there are still some available because they tell me that the website is ilfdublin.com. And you're also going to be at the West Cork Literary Festival. It's not going to be a quiet summer for you. That's in July. And The Master, Colm's opera, which we just discussed, will be at the Wexford Festival Opera from the 21st of October to the 6th of November. And wexfordopera.com is the website for that one. Colm, thank you so much. A pleasure.
Thank you.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.